The first five scrolls, which are the first five books of the Bible, the Old Testament, were called after the first few words of that book. And it wasn't till "In the beginning" was translated into another language that it was called Genesis. When obviously "In the beginning" and Genesis are saying the same thing. But we're going to be looking at some of the issues really coming from the book of Genesis, some of the challenges there, and we're particularly looking at the first chapter, the first few verses, and some of the questions, particularly about our origins, that arise out of it. So if you've got a Bible, I'm only going to read a few verses to you, not the whole chapter. But let's open "In the beginning." It's in the Genesis, and I'm going to read the first few verses. So, "In the beginning, God created the heavens and the earth. Now the earth was formless and empty. Darkness was over the surface of the deep, and the Spirit of God was hovering over the waters. And God said, 'Let there be light,' and there was light. God saw that the light was good, and he separated the light from the darkness. God called the light day, and the darkness he called night. And there was evening, and there was morning, the first day." For me, big questions come out of the book of Genesis straight away. Particularly about our origins. But I want to just help you in terms of, as I tell you my story about how I've gone through the book of Genesis, particularly over, well, my evolution actually, over the whole thing, is you need to think of these things. What type of writing is this? So even before you read something, you need to think, what type of writing is this? And so here's some options. Is it literal history? Is it prose? Or is it poetry? Or is it a song? Or a myth with no grounding in reality? A fairy story? And then the second question that really occurs here, this is a book all about God. You'd be surprised how many times the word God comes in the first chapter. But another word that comes often as well is the word Yom, the Hebrew word Yom. And it means... well, what does it mean? Does it mean 24 hours? Does it mean a period of time? So 1,000 years, 1,000,000 years? Or is it an allegorical, poetical kind of thing, which just means some sort of time? What does it mean? It's kind of interesting that the Hebrew day didn't start from when we do now. It started from the evening, 6 a.m. till 6 p.m. till 6 p.m. So that's kind of interesting why when they talk about a day, it says from evening. You know, as we start from morning till dawn, dawn till dusk, don't we, basically? That's kind of how we describe a day. The answer to these questions will most probably determine how you view origins. These things are very important. Here's another question for you, number three, if you're still following. Does the text continue uninterrupted? Or is there a gap? For instance, does God just create the earth and therefore it's very old? And then, verses 2 onwards, he starts to create the things on the earth as well. Is there a gap between verses 1 and 2, or even after verses 2 and 3? Am I making you think? I can see lots of sort of elastic bands going around in people's craniums here. Okay? That's good. That's the whole idea. And those three questions are very important, but I put it to you, this next one is the most important. And it's the one that gets least talked about, actually. What is the author trying to say? What is the author trying to say? For instance, creation started as formless and void, but through God's creative work, it's being formed and filled. Is that how we view these verses? Also, we read here that man is made in the image of God. He's not a product of chance, and he has a commission to spread God's rule throughout the earth. Thirdly, we're told here that God created everything. Opinions will differ even in this room about how, and that your view of Yom and things like that, and old earth, new earth, old mankind, new mankind. Views will differ here. And you have to think about things. But what we would agree on is that the Bible makes it clear that God created time, he created space, and he created matter. That's what these first few verses are telling us, this first chapter. And yet also, these first five scrolls, so in the beginning, which we now call Genesis, and the other four scrolls, were all written, except the very end of the fifth book, by one person. And we forget that sometimes. And it was written kind of like to have a point as well. It's heading somewhere. Writing of Revelation heads somewhere. It's good to know where it's heading. And basically what it's just saying is that Israel worships the one true God. And the gods of the nations are useless parodies. They're tin pot gods compared to the real thing. That the living God is the real thing. And you can know him. Have you ever come to know the real thing? Are you still asking what's life all about? Or just going round and round like clothes in a washing machine? Going through the cycle of your day, not quite knowing why you're here. So that's the thing here. And I put it to you, next slide please, that these factors shape our thinking. They're true for all of us. So you look at these things, you've got culture. Our culture plays a part. Every culture has its beginning story. We do today, don't we? We have our beginning story, the Big Bang Theory. That's our beginning story today. That's what people are told we believe happened. Every culture has its beginning story. The media shapes us, school shapes us, family background shapes us, our interests shape us, our friends and our values. All those things shape our thinking and who we are. Our thinking also is coloured by prevailing views. So we live in a secular time. Whereas if we lived even 200 years ago, the culture would be very different. But we live in a secular humanist time, basically. Whereas 200 years ago, they were very much more God-centred than what we are now in our thinking. And this colours things and changes over time as well. So atheistic secular humanism is the dominant force today. And you need to be aware that shapes how we think. George Orwell said this, that at any given time there is a body of ideas which is assumed all right thinking people will accept without question. It's very, very interesting. And therefore, that brings us to the next slide, please, our subject for today, and that's evolution in the Bible. Because the study of human origins has often caused a storm. The general public has been bombarded with books, articles, TV, debates. The subject is so technical. Attitudes on both sides are often very aggressive. And the man in the street gets confused about what the real issues are. And what I want to try and do is talk to you as the man in the street today. Now, I recognize there'll be a whole spectrum. There'll be people that have read umpteen books and you'd like to get really into the technical things. Happy to go there with you personally. Because I've had to do that myself. Because it's important to me. But there's others that, you know, you just want to know the bare bullets, basically. Please help me with the bare bullets. So I'm trying to help you all here today. Do you all understand where we're trying to go?
Yeah.
Okay, good. All right. So let me introduce my first slide, then of the next one. And let me introduce you to 18-year-old Mike. My dad was in the army, hence the army hat. I'm sitting on a veranda in Hong Kong. And then spotty 18-year-old Mike was at university studying physiology and biochemistry. And basically, my evolution, basically what shaped my thinking was that these things were true. That the word evolution is used in different ways. So you find when something passes by degree to a different stage. So the evolution of Greek civilization. Or the slow development of a writer's skill. You know, their skill has evolved. But that's not how we're talking here. We're talking here about biological evolution, which is the sequence of events involved in the evolutionary development of a species or group of organisms. So that's what we're talking about today. And basically, an example of what I believed, because that's what I was told, it wasn't presented to me as a theory, it was presented to me as facts, and therefore, you swallowed that. That's what you thought. And so you find this whole development here that of change, and basically there's a concentration here that fundamentally the jaw of a human is like a V with a slight kind of angle on the end, and the jaw of an ape is much more like a U. It's like that shape. It's not more square. And so what has been found over the years through, usually in the same sort of layers actually, there's various ape skulls, and these skulls are given particular names, and much is said about them, but basically the fossils of human missing links could well be examples of regular humans and regular apes that have had some tiny irregularity. It's amazing how what is presented here. I used to live in an area called in Sussex, and the Piltdown Man was found. Everybody heard of the Piltdown Man? And, you know, it was heralded as one of the big important missing links. And then they actually found a few years later that it was actually a pig's jaw. Now, there are some more serious things than that. That was very much on one scale. But it's important, but basically what you would believe, 18-year-old Mike believed that, basically. And next slide. Essentially what I'm saying to you is, these scientific fields shaped what I thought about. So the subject of paleontology, so scientists who examine fossils, propose the family tree of life, the fossil comes from, and estimates the time frame in which they lived. And that's based on the geological column, so the actual rock layers that fossils are found in. And there's a presupposition that they've been systematically laid one on the other, which is generally true. But what is then presupposed is an enormous period of time has taken place for this to happen. So that's the study of paleontology. The study of geology, the study of rocks, and then the study of biology, more looking at animals and plants. And these all basically came together and shaped my thinking, next one please, and essentially proposed a two-step theory of evolution. And the first step is basically summarized here, that in primordial soup, 10 plus billion years ago, or 4 plus billion years ago, accidents in a very random way of atomic collisions resulted in the formation of some simple form of life and the development of living organisms from non-living matter. So the big scientific name given to that is abiogenesis, basically. So that's what's saying, out of nothing came something. That's the fundamental thing. But it involved millions of years. And then, the second step is what we're more familiar with, is because along came Charles Darwin, and he gave us a possible mechanism for how simple life evolved over the next 3+ billion years into the family tree that we know of now. Plants, animals, and humans. And basically, it needed long-term, it needed time, and it also needed minute changes, which brought about not just differences in a species, but actually brought new forms into place as well. So it wasn't just like you get variations in horses, but over time, that variation led into the creation of something new as well. Are you understanding me? I'm trying to keep this as simple as I can, which is hard work. And then this is the geological column that people have presupposed. And so the oldest rocks we call Precambrian, and it goes up to the newer rocks at the top, basically. So that's kind of the twofold a theory of evolution that we are aware of today. Okay, next one, please. 20-year-old Mike suddenly encountered a Christian. 20-year-old Mike encountered what's called the good news of the gospel. Something much more radical and more powerful than any atomic bomb. And it involved who Jesus is, that God stepped into the world, died on a cross, rose again, and he did it for me and you, to change our life, to make us clean, to make us feel loved, to give purpose, to satisfy us, to change our eternal destiny, and to bring a different quality of life into our lives. And so that happened to me. And then what happened out of that is that our particular evolution took place. I met the girl of my dreams. My family expanded. Our family expanded. And it's still growing, even now. Can be added to. But what I want to leave you with is this. So as a 20-plus-year-old man, I suddenly had these questions. I'd met God, and it's beginning to change my life. But it raised all these questions in my mind. And the questions we asked right at the beginning, is this literal truth? Is this poetry? Is it allegorical? Is it just a song? Is it a hocus pocus? Is it just like a nursery rhyme? And if you could come inside my brain then, it would have looked a little bit like mincemeat, I think, basically, at that time. So, it's a tough old time, and I had to think a lot about things. Now, I want to just pause there and give you two helpful bits of advice. Next slide, please. The first one is this, is that you can challenge people's interpretation of the Bible. You do know that, don't you? You do know that? You do know, for instance, there are different views about how Jesus will come and when he'll come. Well, no one knows when, but the circumstances about how, there's two or three major camps about that. And they're given names. So there's a, you know, and if someone says to you this, well, you can challenge that interpretation. Okay, you are allowed to do that. It's actually called grown-up Christianity. It's to be encouraged. Really is to be encouraged. And so, for instance, one of the things that had dominated the time when Darwin lived was the work of a man called Bishop Usher, and he's Irish. And what he did is that using biblical genealogies from Genesis 5 and 11, and other supporting biblical passages, he pieced together a timeline, and he took a known point in history, i.e. the fall of Jerusalem, which is well documented to have happened in 588 BC, and then using these genealogies, he counted backwards, and he simply added up the dates and came up with the year 4004 BC as Adam's birthday. Happy birthday, Adam. All right? And actually, I don't know if it's still, I haven't got a Scofield Bible, but I knew this was true last century, I've not looked this century, But up to the early 20th century, many Bibles had this timeline in their margin. Scofield Bible is a good example. But people challenged it. I haven't got time to give you all their names and their works, but if you want to know, I can tell you. And essentially, these are the main points. You can't get truth out of genealogies. Not every age is mentioned, for instance. You know, it's making a point. Luke mentions a name that isn't in this list. There's lots of missing gaps as well. So it's impossible to extrapolate to an exact date. Do you hear what I'm saying? All right? I think most probably the Bible seems to intimate that men and women haven't been around for millions of years. But you can't give it an exact date. You can't add 2017 to 4004 and come up with the number of years that men's been around. But I think the Bible does seem to say that we haven't been around for millions of years. Am I helping you? But you can challenge what the Bible says. In other words, you are allowed to use your brain, because God's given you that. Science isn't an enemy. Oh, that's very important. Science is looking at completely different things to what the Bible looks at. It looks at how and why and rather than who. Second thing, you are allowed to challenge evolution. Same principles, really. You know, from nothing came something which became everything. I would put it to you, you need more faith to believe that than you do that God created the world. I'll just leave it like that. This man, Paul Davis, one of many, not a Christian, says our universe is about as likely as you or I taking a bow and arrow and aiming at a target on the other side of the observable universe and hitting the mark. You know, it just assumes the arrow will actually arrive there. Just impossible. Totally impossible. So all this stuff that I just assimilated in my mind as an 18-year-old, when I met the Bible, it was all being churned around and having to be thought through and getting a different perspective on things and seeing if they're compatible as well. A long time ago, all the matter that currently exists in the entire universe was condensed and compressed into one tiny speck. This is what you have to believe. Smaller than a grain of sand. Then something called a quantum fluctuation hit it, causing this particle to explode outwards. And at the precise moment, an incredible explosion causes all the matter to fly outwards, not just fly outwards, but at a controlled speed as well. And if the speed was too fast, nothing would ever settle down and exist. But if it was too slow, would just implode. And this process gives rise to the ever-expanding universe we live in today. That's what we're taught. That's the foundation. Using modern instruments, we observe that the universe has just enough juice to carry on expanding forever. The speed of this expansion is critical. If slowed down too much, it would just collapse. Stephen Hawking, you know Stephen Hawking. So he said in his Brief History of Time, he says, if the rate of expansion of 1 second after the Big Bang had been smaller by one part to 10 to the power of 14, the universe would have collapsed before it ever reached its present size. Another scientist says the likelihood of the universe being created as a result of chance is very unlikely. It's very unlikely. Next one, please. Are you still with me? Am I beginning to lose people? I'm trying to keep it simple.
Still here.
Okay, you're still here. Good. Okay. Is the pressure still on from the front? Cool. Okay. Professor Thomas Nagel. You can read that for yourself. But what he says, he's not a Christian. He's not purporting to believe in Christianity. But he just basically says, where does consciousness come from? That's really all he's asking. I'm just simplifying that slide for you. You know, the theory of evolution seems to not give enough attention to talking about where does our consciousness come from. In other words, what makes you and I different from the animals? It's not just the shape of our jaw. It's very, very interesting. Again, we haven't got time to look at that. Here's a big point. Next slide. Evolution is a theory. Okay? It is a theory. And it's, if you happen to believe it, then please don't let it stop you examining who Jesus is. Okay? Because it is just a theory. That was a huge revelation to me. Because I was taught it was a fact. But it's a theory. It's a theory. Next slide, please. Here's a bit of a summary then, so far. What does evolution and creation require? In evolution, man is a central figure. It's all fueled by chance. It requires millions of years and sees man improving, you know, rising. You know, unlike the pound recently, it's rising. Because we're going to get better. Because of change. Whereas actually, the main view of creation is that God is a central figure. It's fueled by design and divine providence. The time scale is not so crucial. And man is portrayed not as rising, but as fallen. There's something goes wrong right in the beginning of Genesis. Although man is the pinnacle of God's creation, he takes his eye off of God and does something that changes the rest of humanity and brings what we call sin into the world and colours our view of God from that point on. In fact, so colours it that we can't usually see him. Don't even know he exists. So that's quite interesting, isn't it? That those are the kind of things that are at the root of these two concepts, really. As we move into the home straight, I'm just telling you my story, and I'm giving you some things to think about. And I'm asking you right at the end, what do you believe? It'll be very interesting to discuss that amongst you. What do you believe? What have you come up with? Where are you? Are you mature? So next one, please. Another big point is that Darwin gave modernity, in other words, now, or last 200 years or so, the mechanism it needed to throw off the authority of God's word. Now, unfortunately, that most probably was being misused and abused. You know, the church often used it as control over people rather than freedom. And preached legalism rather than grace. And you can't question. But you can question. It's okay to question. Science isn't our enemy. It's our friend. So don't get threatened by something you don't need to be threatened by. Don't have a fight when you don't need to. All those sorts of things are going on. But my comment to you would be, I've already made it, is this. That to believe in a two-step evolutionary process, because you've got to believe in both steps. You've got to. Takes more faith than believing that this is God's word, it's his revelation, it is truth, it's reliable, there is a personal God, and he made us in his image, And when we screwed it up, he actually put a rescue plan into operation, which is better than Thunderbirds. And changed your life and my life as well. So that's the two kind of places where you need to be. And you need more faith, I would put it to you, to believe in the two-step theory of evolution than in what the gospel is. Albert Einstein argued the universe is not static, but is expanding. And that seems to be remarkably clear. It just seems to be true. In other words, the universe is like an inflating balloon. It keeps getting bigger. Then Edward Hubble observed that nearly all the other galaxies are moving away from us. And if the universe is expanding, it must have been smaller than it is today. And that's why scientists believe it had a beginning moment. It's kind of interesting, isn't it? So scientists don't doubt that there's a beginning moment. We've got more in common than we think. And in 1965, background radiation in the universe was discovered that looks like it was left behind by this beginning moment. And this meant you could believe the universe has always been there. No, it didn't. It means you couldn't believe that. Very important. You couldn't believe that. It had to come from somewhere. Why should the universe suddenly come into being for no real reason? And all people can say is the bottom line is random chance. And I personally could swallow the random chance pill if it was just on one aspect. But it's on everything. You know, there's so many systems and processes and the formation of DNA and the right DNA strand and all those kind of things, you know. I mean, if it's just one thing, for instance, wow, we've got a battery. But there's nothing to put your battery into. What's the point? You see, there is a designer. No one looks at his wristwatch and says, oh, that came about by chance. That just fell into place over millions of years. I mean, that would be ridiculous, wouldn't it? No, there's a designer, and they're normally Swiss. And they're usually very wealthy. See, that's the... Wake up and smell the coffee. That's the facts. I would put it to you that the Big Bang has no adequate explanation for the sudden appearance of the universe. And I would put it to you that God is the most obvious explanation for the existence of the first organism. People talk about the development of life on Earth by chance, but there's a huge gap between the most complex non-living system, a snowflake, and the most primitive and simple cell. There's two major obstacles. Could the first cell have been constructed by chance? And where did DNA come from? Those are just unanswerable. I mean, people give you lots of clever words, but they're really saying it's random and it's by chance. Francis Crick, the discoverer, one of the discoverers of DNA, said, there is zero possibility of life coming into existence in this way by chance. Very interesting, isn't it? Okay, let's look at a few other things as we close. Has this been helpful so far? Okay. Some other questions were asked. What is a day? Even in chapter 1, it can be interpreted in three ways in the first chapter. Is it a 24-hour or a geological time period? Was Adam a real person or an allegory? What do you think? So Hebrew prose is used in Genesis chapter 1 to 11. And Hebrew prose looks very different to Hebrew poetry, i.e. what's used in the Psalms. They're two different things. I personally believe that Moses deliberately writes in the same style as, for instance, 1 and 2 Chronicles. It's the style of a historian, not of a poet. Next one, please. Let's go through some things very, very quickly now. And I'm just going to just raise lots of questions with you. Is it crucial if the earth is old or young? So, okay, just supposing then, Genesis 1 talks about matter was, the planets were formed, but number 2, it's how it was all filled in. There is a gap between 1 and 2. It's about the earth and the animals and the 7 days. In other words, the world, that's why we can have an old earth. It seems to me that if you're going to apply scientific reasoning, then Christians have to recognize the earth looks pretty old. Hello? But none of that, let's get on to what really counts, none of that changes the facts that Jesus is the Son of God. Don't you love him? Isn't he wonderful? Isn't he real? Hello, men.
Amen.
Jesus is real.
Yeah.
I just love watching men go to church on a Sunday at Christmas. We go to our village church. They're all there in their best jackets, their tweed and their things like that. And they're all standing there completely erect and motionless, not knowing what to do. And usually, sadly, the vicar doesn't give them anything to think about, which is really sad. But listen, men, I'm talking to you men here. I'm not ignoring you ladies. Men, Jesus is wonderful. Okay? It's not me having a pink moment here. This is a strong moment. Jesus is for real men. Jesus would sing rugby songs, but with different words. Okay? See, he's a real man. He's not a mamby-pamby. It's for real men. And I just love him very much. Last slide. 60-year-old Mike believes in microevolution because it's there. You can't deny it. Science proves it. Look at the butterfly. Look at the moths. You know, all the things you learn in your biology lessons. It happens. How in the Industrial Revolution, their wings darkened so they wouldn't be seen so much, so the birds wouldn't come and zap them for food. You know, they check the colour change, so they would be less, they were not easily distinguished. And there's loads of things like that. I would say the human race is young, but it's impossible to give an exact date. Impossible. I would say Adam was a real person. I personally believe Yom, for the majority of its use in Genesis 1, equals 24 hours. But if you don't, that's fine. It's not going to change the fact that Jesus is Lord. I believe there's an older earth, and you have to acknowledge that. And I would just, as a teaser, because we said nothing about this, was it a worldwide flood, or was it a pretty big local flood? Or a series of local floods? Very interesting, isn't it? Because all those things shape and change. Final slides, please do these very quickly. I would say this, that be serious about examining who Jesus is. If you know where the universe is headed, you know that basically. Know where the universe is headed when you know how it started, basically. If you know where we started, you know where you're heading. If you're just sort of mooching around, you don't know where you start, you've got no idea where you're heading. You can have some hopes and maybes, and I really hope it's heaven. You know, and I've done so many funerals where people have hoped in that, and you have to crush that hope, because you have to be truthful, but you have to do it in a loving way, because you don't know. Can't guarantee that. Only God knows that. Next one. The Bible tells us that God created the universe with nothing more than the voice of his authority. What a big God we have. What does that mean? It means as you go through your day, a big God's with you. Did you hear that? Okay. Hey, as young parents, you've got a big God with you. Okay. So as I was watching you, I just remembered having three young kids around me, and it's called survival on Sunday, isn't it? That is evolution, survival of the fittest, basically. But a big God's with you. A big God is really with you. You know, and whatever, whether you're going through some problems over here, I sense over here some people with a bit of a difficult week. And God's, a big, strong God is with you. Isn't it fabulous, eh? Absolutely fabulous. And with just two Hebrew words, God creates our galaxy.